original language.
Senator Lassen, and the original language is in the Senate version.
I guess the question is, the original bill took care of that concern, correct? The House bill?
Yes, Senator.
Thank you.
It'll become clear as we go along. Thank you. Shall we hear the testimony? Senator Jean.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Bob, I guess I'm just kind of quickly going through, and one of the concerns that I have normally on the restrictive land classification here is that we maintain traditional and historical uses of the people in the area, and I don't see that really covered in the bill. I mean, we've got the section one is the findings, section two is the creation of the critical habitat, and also then the along that there you have the some of the purposes that go along with there. Section B there basically pertains to the fish and wildlife populations and basically the environment. Good. And then it doesn't say anything about the protecting the uses of the people in the areas there.
Madam Chair, Senator Zaroff, that question was posed to Fish and Game, and granted it's not in the legislation, but they said the department stated that all traditional fishing, subsistence activities, et cetera, would be guaranteed under a critical habitat area.
But then, Madam Chairman, I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be inserted in there so that you do have that protection, so you don't have somebody in 10 years coming back and saying, I'm sorry, you can't pick berries here. Now, this is a critical habitat that may cause some disruption. And that's been some of the concerns I have. And that, you know, basically, whoever's been using that area should continue to use it in the future, providing it does not go against the you know, the original intent. But basically, your traditional subsistence uses normally won't affect any of the current, I mean, the status of the land. I mean, if you're going to go in and bulldoze it over, that's totally different. But if you're going to go pick berries or
duck eggs
or whatever, you know.
Right.
So
we can check on that for you, Senator. Senator,
me?
Yes, Berzelewski.
I know in section 4 it talks about the Good News Bay Area offshore prospecting permits and speaks to those people who currently hold a mineral lease permit offshore, et cetera, et cetera. They would be allowed within 90 days after the effective date to exchange that for acreage outside. And I suppose my question would be if that's an appropriate legal action, and in effect, where are we not abrogating leases and agreements that are out there? There are just some complexities here that I do not understand.
I'll be happy to explain those as we go when we have you with you on the mat. Are there further questions, Bob? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Larry Ostrowski, you've heard some questions coming up. Could you help clarify some of those for us, please?
Thank you very much, Larry.
thank you, Madam Chair. Larry Ostrowski from DNR. When this bill came through the House, we had no objections to it. Our position has been one of neutrality. Since that time, there have been further discussions and compromises worked out, and that's still our position.
Larry, there was a question concerning critical habitat area and the traditional uses still being going on. Do you have capabilities of responding to whether or not they still be able to pick berries or do this, whatever it is?
Madam Chair, I would defer to Fish and Game because they manage critical habitat areas.
Oh, okay. Are there questions? What's going on? Are there questions of Mr. Ostrowski?
Well, Madam Chair, is he the appropriate one to talk about leases or not? You handle leases, do you?
He must be because he's not a berry picker.
I may be the appropriate one.
Well, did you hear my question about abrogation potential abrogation of leases. Can we do that?
Through the chair. Senator Sergielewski, Mr. Smith or Mr. Herron can talk more about this. I don't believe that this abrogates any existing rights in the area. I believe there is only one OPP applicant out there.
I understand Mr. Smith was going to fill us in on that.
I have a question.
Shall we get Mr. Smith go through it and then have the questions raised from Larry?
No, he can come back.
Madam Chair, in my opinion, it would help us to know
what's going on.
What's going on? And I don't think we've heard what's going on yet.
I'm trying to get to that as fast as I can.
Good.
Mr. Smith, would you identify yourself, please, for the record?
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Tony Smith. I'm an attorney with Davis Wright Tremaine. I represent Good News Resources, which is the company which has, with Karen Sheardown, the offshore prospecting permits, and I'll be glad to do that. Senator Sergielewski, I will get to your question, but Jerry Gallagher and Commissioner Gorsuch have both been involved in the provision that you pointed to, and in fact, it is appropriate. Let me give a brief background, Madam Chairman, if I could. And I'll move to the map if I could. Karen Sheardown and Good News Resources filed offshore prospecting permits that covered all of Good News Bay. For instance, Good News Resources has a lease in here. All of this area out here down, and they would go down in this area right here. All these were initially filed. The initial bill created a critical habitat for the entire area and precluded all mining and mineral entry. This area is ranked by the Bureau of Mines as the number one strategic platinum deposit in the United States. It has not been explored and it has not been developed, so therefore it's a prospect. But it is one of only two prospects in the United States. The other is in Yellowstone and within the Yellowstone boundaries. We presently import our platinum, most of it from South Africa, the rest from the USSR and the United Kingdom. This bill has involved a great deal of discussions and work, and I think really some good faith on the part of Representative Hoffman, Senator Fahrenkamp, and a number of other people who have been involved in working on the specifics of the conflict between the resources, the fish, the subsistence conflict, and the conflict with platinum mining exploration and development. Because I think it's important that we understand before exploration that we're in an exploratory stage, not a development stage. What we found is in the best interest finding, certain of these prospects, these applications, had very high value for eelgrass subsistence and for fish migration. And in other areas, there was not a conflict. So what we've done is based on the 2 years of hearings, analysis, and input from Fish and Game, from DNR, from the Coastal Zone Management Group. This is a situation where a tape was made in UPIC in the local hearing so that the people would understand in their own language the conflicts that we're dealing with when the hearings were held out there. And what we finally did was resolve that my client would give up all of their applications within Good News Bay and in the buffer zone down to this area. It was 80% of the total filings. The total applications were agreed to be given up. Now, in return for that, there's provisions to allow my client an exchange for some areas along here and in this area that were part of the initial area opened up for applications and for exploration and development. And that's the exchange provision, Senator Sergielewski. I can assure you we wanted an exchange on an acre-to-acre basis The administration's position was that was unacceptable, and we worked out an exchange with the program with the administration where we will give up about 12,000 acres. So we get 9,000, we give up 22,000, it's about 12,000 net loss in acres of areas that had very high prospects, but that the critical habitat nature was sufficiently large that the conflict is being resolved by that being critical habitat and no exploration, not open to mineral entry. There is a migration and spawning pattern along the shore, which is the area where there is a conflict or a potential conflict. We don't believe that there is, but sonar studies have not been done as to where the actual migrations take place and things of this nature. So the bill sets up under Title 41, concurrent jurisdiction, fish and game, and DNR, this buffer area a half mile out. My client feels that's you don't need a half mile, 500 feet would be adequate. But we agreed that to resolve the conflict, you would have a management plan in this area. And we'd be required to undertake sonar studies and other analysis so that there isn't a conflict. The bill is set up so that DNR or ADF&G can do the studies, or they can require us to do the study. So there's no fiscal note. I mean, it's the price of exploring and developing out there to see that these studies are in fact done. But they're done at the direction of DNR or ADF&G, who have concurrent jurisdiction. And then this area, we expect to explore and develop. You need to understand, Senators, that initial exploration, because this is offshore, in many instances is just dragging a sonar device behind a vessel. We're not talking about, in the first year or so, going out there and disturbing, digging, dredging, and doing this kind of thing. What we did, quite frankly, in the bill is, in our discussions, neither Representative Hoffman, Senator Fahrenkamp, or any of the people who were involved, wanted to end up in 5 years of litigation. What we want is we want the critters protected, and we want exploration and development to go forward. Because there was an over 2-year process in developing everybody's respective positions on this, the best interest finding, the draft best interest finding that was promulgated, serves as the management plan because it prohibits my client from doing exploration except under certain constraints and requires in the stipulations certain scientific studies to be taken care of. That is in place and is the plan initially, with the authority to revise that plan based on studies. And we fully expect that will happen. And that is, Senators, only in this area. So you have this area is no longer open for mineral entry and is closed and is critical habitat, and that takes care of all of the areas that to date have been established as a high value for subsistence, for fish, for spawning, and things of this nature. The buffer zone where we don't know is set up under a management plan with a regime established that ensures that there will be nothing that harms the critters as we're moving forward, but the management plan will be updated and will be a dynamic thing done by ADF&G and by DNR. And then the areas here where the 2 years of studies showed there was not a resource conflict, my clients will be able to go forward and explore and hopefully eventually develop that area. Again, development is not going to happen the first year. Any mineral operation, any mineral exploration is finding the needle in a haystack, and we need to proceed in that. Last couple of items. In previous testimony, we've dealt with mercury and studies that are outstanding and all these kinds of issues. The way the platinum, assuming that it's found, would be developed is by a gravity dredging process that is similar to the Bema and Nome, and is the same as the same process as when you're dredging the Dillingham Harbor or the Anchorage Harbor. It is not an amalgamation process. It does not involve chemicals. It is a strict dredging operation. So and that's down the road a piece. So that is what is reflected in this bill. There is a provision that takes care of the recent trustees case, where the Supreme Court said that you needed to have an additional set of findings from DGC, and it was an ambiguity. And what we basically deal with in the bill is that this long administrative process that we've gone through has resulted in the conflicts between the different resources being worked out and being taken care of. And the expectation is that we would be able to go forward with exploration starting this summer.
Madam Chair.
Senator Sturgeon.
Just to get an idea of scale, and it's difficult to be very close on, are you looking at maybe a 2.5 mile swath and maybe 6 to 8 miles in length? Just to give an idea
half,
of scale.
Half mile, Senator.
No, I'm talking about the whole thing that comes under. Isn't it those lines going out to that line?
Yes, it is. It's going out to the territorial seas, right out to the 3 mile limit. Mm-hmm. And this is the 3 mile limit. This is the half mile. So yes, if you mean 2.5 miles.
Okay,
here,
so that's
right.
About, yeah. Well, the whole thing would be about 3 miles.
3 miles.
And then is that accurate as to how far it goes north to south?
Yes, I believe it is. Phil Holsworth did the map.
So that would be 6 to 8 miles long.
Right. That's correct.
Other questions? Tony, have you finished? You have not, have you? Have you finished?
I am finished, but I'd be glad to answer any questions. So.
Are there any questions?
Well, Madam Chair, I wonder if Mr. Smith can say, was Calista involved in this these discussions?
They were not specifically in the discussions, Senator Sturgeon-Lewski. They sent a letter asking that three items of concern be taken care of, and it's my understanding that those are reflected in the bill that they were concerned about. They did testify at one hearing before House Resources.
I just got it.
Did you get your questions answered, Senator Sturgeon? Are there questions on the part of anyone else? Tony, you'll be here for questions we have.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Bruce Baker, ADFG.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Department of Fish and Game has been involved with staff in the development of the critical habitat area portion of this bill. We have not been involved in the development of the current language regarding the DNR managed area around it. With respect to the critical habitat area part of the proposed bill, we find that is acceptable, and there are a number of fish and wildlife resources that I'd be glad to describe or summarize for your benefit. We do, however, have very serious problems with that portion of the bill that designates the DNR managed area around it. The bill is extremely confusing as to the respective responsibilities of Fish and Game and DNR, and just to sort of summarize what those are, for the critical habitat area, it would be the Department of Fish and Game, which has the responsibility for developing a management plan. For the area around it, it would be the Department of Natural Resources. Prior to this last committee substitute, we did submit some amendments that I think are in your packet that would have clarified these respective roles. We can provide those.
Excuse me just a minute. Are you saying that because you have a critical habitat
He's
there,
crazy. It
it's
no.
not there?
He doesn't meet you.
He's not talking about you. Are you saying that because you have a critical habitat there, which we don't have now, that this causes you more confusion in the area?
No, let me start over.
Are sure. you used to handling the water and lands parts of DNR?
Let me rephrase that. This bill does two things, of course. It establishes a fish and game managed critical habitat area subject to Fish and Game Management Authority.
Which
and
is green.
Exactly. Okay. Yes, ma'am. And is subject to the preparation of a plan by Fish and Game. It also prescribes the area in red which is the management area outside the critical habitat area, which would a plan for which would be developed by DNR.
That's confusing to you.
It's not confusing at all to me, but it's confusing to those who read the bill because it's not clear in the bill. Now, we did submit some amendments on the last version of the bill that helped clarify that, but they're not in here, and we find that there have been changes made since then that make the bill all the more problematic. And those,
could we refer to that specifically so we
sure.
we see the areas?
The amendment that we proposed. This was in the version of the bill just prior to the one you have here. Basically, what these amendments would do is separate the establishment of a Good News Bay critical habitat area and the preparation of the management plan that goes with it from the establishment and planning of and planning for the DNR belt around it. Since then, however, we found things in the current working draft that give us problems, and I'll just mention those two or three items to you. We believe that it's presumptuous to conclude in a bill that the issuance of offshore permits would be in the state's best interest pursuant to the 035 finding process and DNR's statutes. We also think it's presumptuous to conclude that it's consistent with the legal requirements in the federal and state coastal zone management laws. The 035 finding that, and the 035 finding is also mentioned in the bill as serving as an interim plan until a plan for DNR's portion of the area is established. The 035 finding that's been prepared to date is strictly a preliminary one. It was never finalized, and it did, as a preliminary finding, contain or elicit a number of comments on the part of Department of Fish and Game that have yet to be dealt with. So we feel a lot more comfortable if that 035 finding had been finalized. So I guess the first suggestion is that that the two areas and the two planning efforts and associated agency responsibilities be more clearly delineated. Another way to do it would be to just separate into two bills, companion bills.
I have no intention of separating these bills. Have you discussed it with the sponsor of the House sponsor of this legislation? Indeed, did he approve of your amendments?
We spoke with the House sponsor, Madam Chair, and at that time the amendments were not adopted.
Thank you. Are there other questions from Fish and Game? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have a question?
Madam Chair, just follow up on that question. You said these amendments were proposed to the sponsor of the bill in the House, and they were not adopted, or was that after the bill had left the House?
They were suggested at the last, I think it was the last House committee hearing. Okay, thanks.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
Just a question. Yes. We're looking at the map up here. Then the only area that we're talking about for the establishment of the critical habitat is only in the green.
Yes, sir. Sorry, Dr. I apologize for not addressing the question you raised earlier about the berry picking. Absolutely permitted. And we've had everything from jackup rigs to oil and gas lease sales occur in these areas, and a few berries won't be missed.
Madam Chairman, where would you pick berries up there? Isn't that all tidal?
They grow on top of the water.
That's a good point. I thought you were speaking figuratively. These are submerged lands, and but figuratively speaking, that sort of activity
grow
is
grow in the Eagle Branch.
Right.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, I guess that's
worth setting me up for you.
Thank you, Senator Charlotte. Moving then to Bill Blue.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am Bill Blue from the Alaska Environmental Lobby.
Check this out. Here.
We have strongly supported the establishment of a critical habitat area in the Good News Bay region. Consistently, we would, of course, like to see the entire area included, but do recognize that the need for platinum as a critical ingredient in such things as catalytic converters, which contribute to air quality worldwide, is a factor that we do have to look at. And we see that the compromise that has been reached in terms of the areas for mining and the areas for critical habitat seems reasonable. However, we share some of the concerns that have been expressed by Efficient Game on the scope and breadth of the bill. It does seem that there are quite a few parts of legitimate public process here which are being short-circuited by such provisions as the one stating that this is consistent with the Alaska Coastal Management Act and that further administrative action is not required. We question some of these exemptions. I don't really believe that those are necessary to accomplish the kind of trade that is being done here, and I think it could perhaps be tightened up a bit to make sure that public interest and public process is done in the proper manner. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bill. Are there questions? Okay. Is there anyone else? I would like to mention we do have John Oscar, and I think it's Greg Roskry from the CZM listening in Bethel. Are there... is there anyone else who wanted to testify on this piece of legislation? Are there any more questions from members of the committee concerning this piece of legislation?
Well, Madam Chair, just taking a look at Fish and Game, have we satisfied the, under Section 1D, Commissioner permitting construction, maintenance, and reasonable use of docking facilities, that been taken care of?
It's my understanding. I don't, we'll have to ask the bill sponsor on that, but they're around. My understanding is. Would you like a chance to look at this bill a little more? Are you ready to move it? Frankly, I'd like to get it on its way to finance if it's not difficult. We all got a chance to look this over good, I know, because it didn't get your package away.
Pardon?
You didn't get your package
right. Away. It's just.
Would you like to put this to the bottom of the day's calendar and come back to it then? I don't see a great movement here on anything. We'll give you that length of time then to look it over before we try to move it later today.
Madam Chair,
yes.
If we don't move it today, when is the next available time then?
Oh, I'd say it'd be about a week, and
it is a problem. Yeah.
It's a real problem, and ask Gold Finance, you're on that committee. I think you would have some influence there.
What are you laughing about?
Maybe not.
Are we still in the bill, Madam Chair? I guess on page 6, Section 4D, what does that mean? Is that something like Senator Gravel did for the pipeline? Everything's...
I think so. Everything's copacetic, let's go. Mm-hmm.
Is that what it says? In other words, we're not going to give them, you know...
Page 6, what line what?
Line 2. I guess I'd just like to know what that really means.
It declares it to be in consistency with Beth CZM. Is what it says.
And it is?
It is if we say it is.
I believe that's what Department of Fish and Game is saying, that they consider that a preliminary plan. I think that was the
answer. Consider what?
Well, the plan that exists now, coastal zone plan that is in existence. That would, I assume, cover this area.
The necessity for that, as I understand it, committee, and I'm not trying to pull anything over on you, is that if we don't want to be in court another 2 or 3 years, if we want to get this thing going, we need to, they need to strike a bargain, and that's what's been done, in swapping some leases for others in order to be able to proceed.
Could I ask Could we just have a very brief at ease on this?
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll be at ease for 5 minutes.
Okay.
Maybe 10.
Yeah. This one is in there.
Accept your motion concerning this legislation.
Madam Chair, I would move committee the Senate CS for sponsor substitute, etc. House Bill 332 Resources version 61396E from committee with individual recommendations.
I think we better put that one before us first.
Oh, well, all right. I would move the
Senate committee substitute be before us.
Right.
Is there objection? Then that committee substitute is before us. Senate would.
Madam Chair, I would move from committee, the Senate committee substitute for House Bill 332 Resources 61396P, individual recommendations, and ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? So be it.
Senator Fahrenkamp, I think we need to get this bill moving, the action that we took, and there'll be time to review other considerations before the next committee.
Absolutely. We will be leaving the people now that we're on teleconference. We thank them for taking part and their interest in listening. We'll move now to Senate Bill 544, an act relating to the reclamation of land and water within the state, provided for effective date. I'd like to bring to your attention on this legislation, if you'd look please to page 3. I had a request from Doyon online. Are you with me on line page 3? Line 15. To put a period at the end of the conditions, you see it there on line 15, and eliminate the remaining sentence in that paragraph. And with that deletion, Doyon would be supportive of the legislation. Is there objection to that amendment? Then we'll consider it amended in that effect. Looking, please, then, at... is that too fast for you now?
We're talking about 472 now, sorry.
544.
An interesting format. 544.
I like that format. I didn't know that. I asked if it was an objection. We are getting online Jerry Gallagher, but in the meantime, we'll call on Phil Holdsworth on 544. Phil, I think before Phil starts to address you, that I would tell you that if you remember in the 6I legislation last year, and I think we discussed this before we put the bill in as a Resources Committee bill, that the 6I called for reclamation regs if we did not have a bill this year to be written. And with that in mind, we felt that rather than leaving it to strictly to the departments, we should set some guidelines from which to, is Jerry online?
Jerry.
Okay, then we'll be using our mics, please. On that 6I legislation, we had asked for regulations concerning reclamation, and what we did then was set guidelines for that reclamation through this piece of legislation as per our discussion before entering it. Jerry, we have Phil up to testify. Would you hold on, please? Go ahead, Phil. Use your mic, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Phil Holdsworth, and I'm speaking for the Alaska Miners Association. There were some differences of opinion among the members of the association, and so to be sure that this was the position of the association as a whole, a ballot was passed around through all the directors from all the branches, and overwhelmingly it was in support of this legislation.
Well,
I thought you'd like to know that.
Surprised you would. Phil, I must say that was a bit of a change from some hearings we held recently, but I'm glad to hear that.
Yes, I understand that. And we made an effort to check this out to see what the whole state felt about it. Chair has mentioned the 6I issue, it was required that some sort of a reclamation legislation be adopted. No time period was actually set, but some of the people in the industry, and in fact I testified to that myself at the time, that after all, mining in particular, to operate a mine, you had to get a permit from DNR. And that permit required stipulations on reclamation. So it was being covered in a manner and that way. At the time, of course, there wasn't too much hard rock mining underground, and the whole attitude has changed throughout the state, and a lot of it comes from that source and the mines being developed. So it was felt more reasonable to go this route and get it in statutes for establishing the reclamation. I testified at the first hearing on this that if you were going to put such a bill in statutes, that it should apply to all industry, not just to mining, such as gravel pits, dot puffs, gravel pits for roads, and all this sort of thing. And it finally was, there was quite a lot of comment about that, but we finally decided to stay with mining and gravel pits, materials, so to speak, any materials that come under that definition in the mining statutes. And so basically that's the purpose of this bill.
Thank you very much, Phil. Are there questions concerning from Mr. Holdsworth? Senator Fry.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago when we were up in Fairbanks, we did hear from the miners that attended the Placer Mining Conference up there, and they were resoundingly against the need for legislation. I think they did like, you know, if you were going to have legislation, they liked this. I mean, they didn't have a problem with this. They, almost to a person, expressed concern about what the legislation may look like after it finished the legislative process, particularly concern about what the other body might do. And I don't know if you talked about that in your balloting or how you actually conducted your balloting. And who did you ballot? You know, you say the directors of the various mining districts, is that right?
Well, that's right. This was discussed after the Fairbanks meeting with our executive director. And he decided that the best way to handle it was to canvass all of the directors of each branch and get them to vote on it. And it's true that there was a majority of the directors in Fairbanks, not a strong majority, but a little majority in the Fairbanks branch, but all the rest of them were 100% support of it because they were involved more with hard rock mining and the rest of this. And the hard rock mines are bigger organizations than the placer mines, the small organizations, which, of course, it's natural for the placer operators to feel that the present system is working. You get a permit from DNR and that reclamation requirement's in it.
So you're saying for the hard rock there isn't a requirement for a reclamation?
Sure, any mine. Yes.
And it's not working for them, for the hard rocks?
Well, no. It's the size and the expanse of these operations. Entirely different from the small 5 acres or less, so to speak, in your placer mine.
I guess I don't understand why the hard rock mine, large hard rock mines, are more supportive than the small placer miners. I don't understand something there. I don't know what it is. It's just a difference of perspective, or what?
Well, I think that they feel just like many of us did, and like the chair had pointed out, that the court case required reclamation in statute. It's under the 6I issue. That was one of the provisions in the court case. And if you didn't follow this position, you're subject to nuisance suits. And that was a concern of a lot of the operators.
I guess it's news to me that the 6I court case required reclamation.
I didn't believe it did. It spoke to it and said that reclamation would have to be adopted. It didn't set a time.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there further questions of Mr. Holder? Can we go, please, to Jerry Gallagher?
The department's position paper has been made available to you. We've been talking about reclamation for a good year now. It was a piece of the 6I legislation that was adopted last year. Unfortunately, many of the substantive provisions of reclamation weren't really discussed during that legislation, and they were deferred to the regulation process. This proposal before you addresses many of those issues head on. The Department of Natural Resources doesn't need support any of the provisions in this act, including the provision to include all land, state, federal, and private, and especially when that's done in conjunction with the authority to enter into cooperative management agreements with those landowners. This provision should prevent the duplication of permitting activities. We also support the department supports the inclusion of both locatable mineral sand and gravel operations. We're very supportive of the concept of a statutory standard for reclamation. We were somewhat concerned about making this very major decision by regulation, and really are encouraged that the committee is considering the standard. We frankly haven't had the opportunity to discuss the specific language proposed with all of the resource agencies, so I can't give you a final administration position on this language before us, but we're certainly encouraged to certainly step in the right direction. And likewise, we believe that the general idea of a small operator's exception works pretty good. We have some concerns with the bonding amount. It's probably in our view, too low, but again, it's a good start, and we look forward to working with the committee on this bill.
Fine. Are there questions of Mr. Gallagher? Yes, Senator Darrow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Jerry, what on this section here that requires a miner to post a performance bond, what happens if the bonds aren't available?
Well, the way this is worded, if a bond isn't available, we would not be allowed to issue a permit for continued operation.
What happens in that situation then?
Well, the miner wouldn't be able to operate any further without posting a bond.
Okay, I guess the concern that I have there, I know we've run across this in the fishing industry there, where bonds were increased to the point that where they would be too prohibitive for a small operator, and I guess and I'm not that familiar with the bonding market, but or the bonds there as they are available. But I guess I'm just a little concerned there that if there isn't anybody in the state there that would make anything like this available, then are we putting a certain class of miners out of business, or if they would be put out of business?
Senator Zaroff, you hit on a very critical issue here, but the issue of bonding. The existing reclamation language in the 6I bill, the language that becomes law in June of this year, is essentially the same with one major exception. It has no cap on it. In other words, it says after you, after the commissioner determines that you failed to comply with your reclamation plan, the department must require a bond before it issues further permits. This approach tends to cap off that bond, or will cap off that bond at $750 an acre. So I just wanted to point out that difference between what will become effective in June of this year and how this bill is looking at. In the broader picture, mine bonding is a national issue in the more rigorous bonding requirement were put into place, that we'd probably have the responsibility to come up with some sort of mechanism for that bonding. For example, the state of Wyoming last year just adopted a bond pool where all of the miners contribute, and then they all can rely on that bond pool.
Yeah, okay, well, I guess that's just a little, it's a concern I have, but then looking at this bill, too, I see that this section here is part of Section 1, and it does not take effect until October 15th of 1991.
Yes, that's correct. In some of the discussions with Senator Fahrenkamp, I think we were all concerned, certainly Senator Fahrenkamp, about some lead time for implementation of this.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Are there further questions, members of the committee? Jerry, I've been absent. Did you get to finish?
Yes, I did. Thank you, Senator.
Anyone else with a question? And thank you very much, Jerry. Please be on standby.
Thank you, Willa.
Mr. Noyes, Doyon.
Thank you, Senator, for the opportunity to speak to the committee today. My name is Harold Noyes. I'm Chief Geologist for Doyon Unlimited. Doyon is the largest private landowner in the state. Doyon is also a Native corporation, received its land from the United States government under the Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971. Doyon has a history of encouraging mineral exploration and development on its lands. This includes work on a wide range of minerals, including industrial minerals, gold, base metals, and a number of sand and gravel operations. Doyon has a policy of including reclamation provisions in its mineral development activities on a site-by-site basis. Only last Friday did we at Doyon become aware of the content of this proposed bill. It is also our understanding that a number of other major private landowners, including Native corporations, were also unaware of the content. Consequently, we have not had time to thoroughly analyze its implications. We intend to review it in more detail and provide more thorough comment later. However, at this time, we have identified two major concerns. One is the application of the bill to Native lands, as indicated on page 1, line 14, and two, the multiple use philosophy applications to Native lands, implied on page 3, line 16. Our immediate concerns would be accommodated by removing any application at all to Native lands, or alternatively, by modifying the undue and unnecessary degradation paragraph on page 3 to delete application to Native lands. Our rationale for this is that Native lands are not required to be managed with a multiple use philosophy. And in fact, many Native lands.
Excuse me, Mr. Noyes, we did that just as this thing began, if you remember.
Okay.
Eliminate that on page 3.
I'd just like to give you the background on our logic for that. And our many Native lands were, in fact, specifically selected under ANCSA with single purposes use in mind. But we'd like to get back to you later with more extensive comment on this. We'll accept that.
Certainly. Senator Frank.
Yeah, maybe another question for Harold, but getting back on the undue degradation, did you take that out? I guess I missed that.
What we took out was the referral to, it's on line 15. I tried to get you to follow very carefully with me on that. Page 3, line 15, we put a period after conditions and removed the land uses section of that sentence, which was taken directly from the federal and didn't hurt the meaning of it anyway, so they went into the, took care of their concern on the multi-use parts of their land.
So you just took out the word
and we put a period at the end of conditions.
Oh, I guess.
Are there further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moving, please, to Chuck Hawley.
Madam Chairman, members, I'm Chuck Hawley, a mine geologist and developer from Anchorage. I'm representing myself, and the only special perspective that I have is as a member of the National Advisory Council to the BLM. That's a citizens committee, which is composed of representatives of various users of public lands, including miners, loggers, and environmentalists, and other cattle people, things like that. This subject, reclamation and bonding, has been raised and will be the subject of council action. The BLM has already indicated that it intends to require bonds or other proof of financial ability on all the federal public domain. It temporarily delayed implementation of the bond provision for Alaska, largely because Alaska has a viable small mining industry that would essentially be stopped if bonding is implemented without some procedure for obtaining bonds. On the other hand, this delay is temporary, and even if BLM delays, there is no assurance that Congress will not take other actions. BLM already and the Forest Service already have the authority to require bonds. The Forest Service in general requires bonds of operations. Nationally, I think Alaska is one of three states without a reclamation statute. One of the other ones, the chief active Western mining state, Nevada, doesn't have a reclamation statute, but it's working on one, and with the idea that that reclamation statute would be in place by the end of their legislative session. I don't know if they will get there, but they're working very hard on it. In general, the lack of reclamation standards gives a strong speaking point or platform to those that really don't like the general mining laws. And one reason that the general mining law has lasted as long as it has, it's been continually updated and modified. And it may be that this is the time to make that modification to the general mining law. In general, I support this legislation, and I commend the chair and others of this committee that introduced it. The basic concept and the fact that it tracks the BLM and Forest Service approach to reclamation should make it a lot easier to obtain good memorandum of understandings with those agencies. The language, the critical language in section 2719.020 is directly ties with BLM, and that's the prevention of undue or unnecessary degradation of the mining site. I mean, that's carefully thought out wording that has been with us ever since FLIPMA. The return of the site to a stable condition doesn't track all other state legislation, but it's pretty close. The states vary quite a bit, but that seems to be a good general aim of reclamation. I have a couple of suggestions for consideration. In section B of 2719.020, I wonder why wildlife habitat isn't another use, and I guess my thinking there is that...
What page are you on, please?
On page one, it would be line 26-27. And wildlife habitat will be the next use of most mining sites in probably 80 or 90% of the cases in Alaska. And the second thing, if you plan your mining operation well, it's probably easier to establish good wildlife habitat than to go about some of these more exotic means of reclamation where you're trying to restore something for some aesthetic use that might be appropriate for the lower 48 but doesn't make much sense in Alaska. Maybe there are reasons why it's not included, but I just wondered on that. On the page 2, line 10, $750, Director Gallagher indicated that possibly was a low amount, but on the other hand, you can do a great deal of reclamation for $750 an acre, especially if you plan from the very start that you're going to do it and you still have the equipment on site, so you're not bringing in a cat from someplace else. And I think it's very important to establish a reasonable amount, even if that's not exactly it. Otherwise, you end up what you do in the Wyoming and other coal countries, where you're spending $3,000 or $4,000 of acre to reclaim land that sells for $300. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. So I think it is important to put a cap there. On the next section, exemption for small miners, it is important to have some kind of an exemption. One problem is that a miner who mines on less than 5 acres in any year might not be a small miner. He might be a very large mining company that's doing exploration and just diamond drill sites with only maybe take up less than 5 acres. And I guess I have a couple of concerns. One, that is the intent to relieve the small miner of doing this reclamation, or is it just to relieve him of the difficulties of getting a bond, which he probably can't do? And I guess I would like to see some more work on that.
The intent there, Chuck, was most of those small areas, it was to encourage more cleaning up as you go in order to keep the reclamation process, not have a large area disturbed, and as you moved with your mine, that you would clean behind you and try to keep it to the 5 acres in order to reach those exemptions, which would speed up the reclamation.
Okay. Well, in other words, I think maybe you need to work a little bit on that, because the 5 acres also applies to exploration and other things besides the small minor exemption, which is important. And finally, again, I think it's an excellent start, and you should be commended for sticking your neck out once again. Thank you.
Senator Sturgis.
Through the chair, Mr. Hawley, I appreciate your testimony. You heard the previous testimony. Do you agree that state, federal, private land should all be included in this? And I guess what happens with the federal legislation? Does that cover all of those areas? In other words, all lands have to be covered?
I think federal and state lands and private lands should be covered. There may be some supremacy language, but the way that you're going at it now is going to track pretty carefully with what the BLM and the Forest Service already do. And I think it will, to have something like this in place, will make it possible to get better regulations out of the BLM and out of the Forest Service, and perhaps may forestall some further changes in the mining law, although it might not even.
Are there further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hawley, very much. Bill Bloom?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am Bill Bloom from the Alaska Environmental Lobby. We'd first of all like to thank the committee for their work on this and for proceeding from the 6I bill last year to getting a reclamation bill introduced. We strongly support the intent, of course, of having a reclamation bill, and we also appreciate the industry expressing its support for it. We think that's key to continued acceptance and growth of the mineral industry in Alaska. As far as the bill itself goes, we strongly feel that all lands in the state should be covered. We believe there are legitimate public interests on all lands. We appreciate the concept of having a standard. We have some various other standards which we think would be preferable. We think that the standard of undue or unnecessary degradation in lay language translates out something along the lines of, well, just don't mess it up too bad, guys. We would like to see something perhaps a little more along the lines of something in providing for the long-term environmental stability, renewable resource productivity, and maintenance of the land and water resources of the state in the manner which best provides for the present needs and preserves the future options of the people of Alaska, and goes on to specify some of the resources that should be preserved so that it's a little clearer and better standard. We would also, along with that, like to see recognition that, particularly in hard rock mining, there occasionally are sites which practically cannot be reclaimed given available technology, and that there should be some acknowledgement of proving a capability to reclaim as a requirement. I'd like to pass around this photograph, which I got from Phil Hawker from the Mineral Policy Center in Washington, D.C. This is a site in Colorado. It's an old mining site. However, the problem is the nature of the tailings. That there is so much acidity in the tailings that repeated efforts by BLM to clean this up or cap it or contain it or dike it and considerable expense has not done anything to take care of the problem. And we do need to make sure, as we go more into hard rock mining, that we can indeed deal with the problems which we generate. Let's see, as far as other points in the bill, we're not too encouraged, or not too happy, I should say, with the current wording on the exemption for small operators. We applaud the intent of encouraging people to clean up and reclaim as they go. That's an excellent intent, and we'd strongly support that. However, in giving a blanket exemption to a small mine, we think that there's a little more of a loophole there than what we would wish to see. Cooperative management agreements we think are excellent. As far as performance bonds, we are fully sympathetic with the industry on the lack of availability of bonded. We would strongly encourage any kind of efforts toward developing a system of bond pooling or whatever else can be worked out. We see this as a key issue. But we think that setting a specific dollar amount is not realistic in this case, because we tend to think historically here in terms of placer mining, in which case $750 an acre may be plenty. But when we think of other kinds of mining, for instance, cleaning up a heap leach site, if there is a problem, the cost could far exceed that. And we think that simply limiting the bonding amount to the language in the first sentence here, which says they may not require an amount in excess of the amount reasonably necessary to ensure the faithful performance of the requirements of the approved reclamation plan, would be more reasonable. We do wish to limit it to the realistic cost, but we also need to make sure that we're covered for that. I think that summarizes our key comments at this time. I'd entertain any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bloom. Do you have your notes so that I could use those to look at?
Yes, certainly.
Thank you. I appreciate if you would leave those with us. Are there questions? Senator Jarrell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it's an interesting picture there. Are there any any pictures there on anything positive that's come out of there? I mean, out of mining? Anything that's aesthetically good?
I got two down in my office.
Madam Chair, Senator Zaroff, we don't have any pictures. With us currently, certainly there are many cases in which mines have been well reclaimed. I've seen many myself. A number of mining operations, both large and small, operate on the basis that that's sort of their first requirement, is that they run an environmentally responsible mine, and it's a very progressive approach. Mines which are quite profitable are able to do this, and essentially, those who are willing to do this will prosper in the future. We see it as a really good opportunity.
Well, Madam Chairman, I guess the reason I asked that was when we had the meeting up in Fairbanks, there was something in between doing nothing and total reclamation. I mean, whether it might be something for a housing development, or whether it might have been a lake or something. And it seems like maybe rather than a total reclamation there, you might have something in between, but I don't know how you get to that point. But a lot of times there are people who are saying, at least up in that area, that at least in some of the housing areas and some of the major development areas, that at one time that area was totally infested with mosquitoes. And since the mining activities there, that's done away with at least part of that. But as a result, you've seen more utilization of the area by homes and whatever else that took place in their roads and trails and this type of thing.
Madam Chair,
I don't know.
Senator Zaroff, in response, I'd say we have never been pushing for miners to leave the land as it was before. Particularly when you get into things like gravel mines, hard rock mines, and so on, there's too much material removed to do that. Placer mining actually is one of the easier types of mining to do good reclamation on, and I think tremendous strides have been made by a number of miners to do that. In the case of something like a gravel pit, there's always going to be a hole there, and the most that we can expect people to do is to recontour, revegetate it. If there's a lake, to leave it so that it might provide good habitat or good recreational opportunities. In some cases, the best use for an old gravel pit might be the kind of development that we've seen in some of the areas in the Mat-Su, where they've simply put a shopping mall there once it's been cleaned up. And if they're going to put a shopping mall someplace, an old gravel pit makes as good a sense of a place for it as anywhere. So we certainly support flexibility in what the conditions for subsequent use would be.
Glad to hear that, Luke. Senator Frank.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry I missed your testimony because I was next door testifying on a bill I had up. Did you have a position on the bill?
Madam Chair, Senator Frank, we strongly support the intent of the bill. We would like to see some changes in it before we can support this specific bill.
Could you give us a written list of those changes?
Certainly, I'll put one.
I had asked for them, and he hasn't.
Oh, okay. All right, I'd like to see those. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to state here now, if they're too drastic, that I would be most inclined to withdraw the legislation. In all fairness, Bill. Is there anyone else that want to testify on this piece of legislation? Chuck, you had something more you wanted to add. Please come on up. Excuse me, Mr. Hawley.
Yes, Madam Chairman, members, I didn't see the picture, but it's kind of a common strategy to produce horse show type pictures for something like this. And there's something that you have to... People talk about pristine sites prior to mining as if everything was virgin clean before the mine started. That's not the case. If the discovery outcrop of Green Street, right over here on Admiralty Island, was called a Big Sore. It was called a Big Sore because it was a massive iron spring full of zinc and sulfur water. If you've seen the outcrop of Red Dog is a dead stream. When we prospect in Alaska, we look for dead streams. And dead streams have high sulfate concentrations. The miners don't bring the metals in. Now, I mean, perhaps this picture was entirely valid, and I don't at all argue that such things don't happen. But I think you've got to look at it in context. And it's not the entire story. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joe. Is there anyone else that want to testify to this legislation? Then we'll close the public portion. The suggestion on wildlife, you wanted to address wildlife habitat, you wanted to address that subject?
Well, I'm not awfully good at writing amendments of things. This was brought up by Mr.
Looks to me like
Pauly,
it could
and
be
I think it is an appropriate consideration. That may be the best use of the land would be for that. But
Mr. Hawley, looking at the bill and legislators, it seems to me you could add between recreation sites and agriculture uses, just add recreation sites, wildlife habitat, and recreation and agricultural uses. Would that not work?
I think it would. I guess I'd like to have some other comment. Maybe I'm sticking in something that I shouldn't be, but it seems to me that it's...
I see everybody shaking their head yes. I don't see anybody out there.
Madam Chair, I would move to amend in Section B, beginning on line 24, wildlife habitat in an appropriate place.
Okay.
Ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? So be it.
Madam Chair, am I correct that two issues raised by Mr. Noyes? One has been taken care of. There were two issues, the application of native lands, and we've heard testimony on that, of the necessity of including all lands. And the multiple use has been taken care of. Is that correct by
That's
the
correct.
Amendment on page 3, lines 15 and 16?
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, Senator, this bill is going to go through a lot of being addressed as it moves along the system. I'd like to try to move along, if I could.
Well, Madam Chair, I think that we should hear from the environmental lobby on their position before we move the bill, so that we can see what we're looking at. Because because, again, the people that I represent in Fairbanks, or at least I should say the miners that I represent, were very concerned about how the legislation is going to look when it comes back from the House. And I want to know what kind of legislation, before it leaves our possession, what kind of legislation the environmental lobby is pushing, and what kind of legislation is liable to come back from the House, just so we know what we're getting into. I hate to lose possession of it and then have it changed drastically without knowing up front what the changes are.
Madam Chair, what is the situation where we're going to be having meetings in Anchorage on the subsistence issue? Is there any possibility that we could build in with a combination of those present and teleconference a meeting of the Senate Resources Committee so that we could move things along?
We are having hearings, but by the time we hear subsistence up there, that's going to be ours on them. In my estimation, maybe we could.
Well, I just wondered, is there any time,
and it's in the
either in the afternoon or in the Thursday morning, just as a possibility, or even a special meeting tomorrow, a short meeting where we could consider this? In other words,
you're not ready to move it today.
Well, that's what Senator Frank is indicating, and my concern is that we have a Senate bill here, and it's going to take some time to get it through the system. Just trying to accommodate you.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how long it'll take the environmental lobby to write us out their list of comments. I mean, I'd like to know what their position is. I don't want them just to say this is their policy, this is, they like the idea. And I'm not trying to, speak ill of the environmental lobby. I'm just saying that I want to know what their position is, so that I'll know what they're going to be asking for in the next committee and the other committees and the other bodies. Because, again, it's out of respect for what I've heard and the concern that I've heard from my community.
Mr. Good, are you at all prepared to respond to that type of a comment today?
Not at this time, Madam Chair. We're working on it.
I don't mind meeting tomorrow. Mornings are bad, but afternoons are good.
Do you have, do you think you could be prepared to give us some briefing tomorrow?
Yes.
Dan, are you people willing to get together tomorrow?
Yes.
What time? 3 o'clock?
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock appropriate? 1 o'clock it is.
I think you should have it.
Okay. Next one before us is HJR 27. We are fast running out of time. Relating for compensation for lost revenues and income caused by high seas interception of Alaska salmon. We're calling the sponsor now. Molly, would you care to comment on this bill, whether, or would you just here to answer questions? Is there anyone else who wanted to testify on this piece of legislation? Have you had a chance to review it, Senator Jarrell?
Madam Chairman, no. I just skimmed through it earlier. I don't know how you do this.
I don't know how you do it either.
That's
weirdness.
The only thing is, I'm a little concerned. We do have some delicate negotiations going on right now, and I don't know what that message just sends.
Well, then let's hold this back when we have more time. Let's wait and see if Senator wants, if Representative Zawack is coming over.
I think that, the concept is fine, that they've been stealing our salmon, and we all know it, but we've also, with negotiations going on, making some substantial progress toward resolving some of this, and I think we should be contacting Mr. Lauber, who was recently in Japan with the International North Pacific Fisheries Management Commission, and see what kind of message this would send. So
I saw Mr. Lauber in the hall. I'm surprised he's not here.
you have any problem hearing from the sponsor. He's here now.
Is Dwight here?
Yes.
Come on, O'Neill, represent Dwight.
Yeah.
Timing's perfect.
We are not on teleconference anymore. Thank you, Jerry. We have before us Senator Zuleika, your HJR 27. Some questions concerning the bill right here, please.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. In the past, Madam Chair, as we both know, we've had several resolutions in regards to our expression of concern about the high seas drift lift problem, which is a very serious problem not only for the state of Alaska, but for many Northwest states and in Hawaii. Part of your packet actually shows a resolution passed by the Hawaii legislative body here just recently showing their concern, which is probably as big as ours. This resolution goes one step further, though, and basically says that it's time that Congress and the President look at the treaties that we have with those countries that we know have their fishing fleets fishing in the high seas and taking Alaska's fisheries or fish within the state. It says that we should find a way from reparation to the state of Alaska and to its fishermen. There's been some concern in regards to, you know, are there constitutional issues involved in that? And we've had our congressional delegations have sent us, and I believe those are in your packets also, stating that it isn't the right of any citizen or a group of people or a legislative body to petition the President and Congress in regards to concern. There was also concern, are we somewhat misleading fishermen by sending a message to Congress that, you know, we are going to talk about reparation back to fishermen and to the state itself? And I guess I would say, if we recall of many of the resolutions that we have sent in regards to the timber industry in the Tongass, to the mining industry, in regards to supporting ANWR, we have emphasized to the people of Alaska that we are stepping forward and showing our concern and trying to support their needs. So this is just one more step in regards to saying we support the fishing industry, and we are going to request from Congress to get serious in regards to the possibility of renegotiating treaties and demanding reparation. I don't believe Dean Paddock is here, but it was also kind of ironic that in 1988, when the United States shut down the last appropriations to Japan for fishing allocations in 1988, before the International North Pacific Fisheries, Japan was demanding reparation to its fishermen for the loss of those out there. So it's nothing new in regards to a foreign country demanding from the United States. Maybe it's time the United States step forward and start demanding reparations for its fish.
You'll notice in your packets, 14 groups that there is this resolution. There was some question as to how we went about this and what effect it might have on the negotiations, Jim, that are going on at the present time. Can you respond to that?
Well, I would hope that along those negotiations or discussions, again, that Congress, or the pertinent associations that we have, i.e. International North Pacific Fisheries, and that they would bring up this and step forward and say, we're going to be demanding a little bit more, and we're going to start to be highly critical. As I said maybe earlier in my comments, when you can have Japan that's demanding from the United States through the North Pacific Fisheries compensation to its fishermen, I think we've got just as much right to bring that before any negotiations out there.
Are there questions, members of the committee? Any questions?
Madam Chairman, I don't.
Senator Jarrah.
I don't have any specific questions on there. I like the concept, but I think I am a little bit concerned. Now, we have made tremendous progress with these last rounds of negotiations. We have had the Japanese come quite a ways in terms of their involvement on the high sea fisheries. They're not quite as far as we'd like to have them come, but they've come a lot further than where I thought they were going to when we first started these negotiations a while back. So I'm just a little bit concerned what type of message that sends at this point.
Madam Chair, I would like to hear from Mr. Lauber as one of the U.S. commissioners on the International North Pacific Fisheries Commission to speak to this. They just did have negotiations. Those have not been fully released because they're going to the Department of Commerce and Departments of State. And just to be sure that in question of timing, we're not kind of following up. I appreciate what you're doing, but there were very substantial ground gained in this very issue, not speaking to the recovery of dollars, but I'd like to be sure that that does not have a negative effect. Senator Jaroff and I are both advisors to that organization, and just for that purpose.
Then we'll invite him to see if he won't participate in his MART 1. Would that suit your? Then if he has no problem, we'll look at moving it right away. Okay. Thank you, Jim, very much. We're having a special meeting MART 1, so we'll try to handle two pieces of legislation at once.
Thank you, ma'am.
The next piece of legislation before us is.
Pardon?
You got a hold of Rick.
Look at all of them. SB 472. The bill sponsors here. Senator Coghill.
Move over, Jim.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Leaving fish and going to moose.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, for taking up this bill again. We've gone through it. The moose ranching is a concept that's been around. It's being done in Russia. It's being done in the Scandinavian countries. It would take the moose kill of the railroad figures that with the emotion of the moose kill on the railroad that maybe this issue could be resolved this year. We want to put in with the buffalo and the muskox the idea that we can also have moose ranching and that we can domesticate it and that we can use it in the proper process of selling moose meat on the market. I look at this as probably one of the most exciting ways that we could really do something for rural Alaska as far as starting a whole new basic industry. And I could see us leasing grazing leases and on public domain and tranquilizing some of those moose and taking them into areas where they could have moose ranching. The Fairbanks News Miner is in favor of it. They've written a couple editorials on it. I brought from some pictures that are kind of gross. These are pictures of moose that have been
That's for the wolves.
Annihilated, and they took, and they're spending $3,000 to $4,000, as I understand. I was told they're spending between $3,000 and $4,000 to transport those moose out off of the railroad right away and into the areas to feed bears and wolves. And for one-tenth of that price, why the private sector would come in and tranquilize and remove and put them into ranches. And I think that it's a good idea. We've got a long ways to go with it, and I'd like to ask the committee to move it along.
Senator Coghill, in discussing this with one of the farmers that I know is interested in doing it, it was his opinion that in many areas there you would not have to tranquilize, but would be able to would use cabbage, et cetera. I don't know anything about domesticating meat, so I won't bring that up.
Well, my only remark to that is if you ever want to get, you get one of those critters cornered and those legs go flying all over the place, I'll tell you, you got one of the most dangerous critters in the world. As far as protecting themselves, they protect themselves with their legs, and they fly out. Boy, I tell you, they can really, really whack at you. And personally, I'd like to tranquilize them, but I know what you're saying. The department is opposed to it. Department's going to be opposed to it. They're always going to be opposed to any indigenous wildlife domestication, and I think that we've followed that throughout the history of our civilization, why we'd be in a world of hurt. So I think the red meat, we could provide a lot of red meat into the marketplace by doing this. And I'm sure there's some pitfalls along the way, but if we don't start now, we'll never get a chance to resolve it.
As I understand it, there are moose farms in Norway and Sweden?
Norway and Sweden and Russia.
Thank you.
And also in Canada, right? Our neighbors next door have a white horse.
Are there questions, Senator Garfield? Senator Jarrell.
Isn't that something?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Madam Chairman. Senator Coghill, would this bill then allow our Alaskan moose then to be used, or would it simply allow for the importation of moose to start a herd?
My intent is to domesticate the local moose.
And I guess the reason I asked that, Madam Chairman, is that when we had a ranch around Kodiak that was interested in buffalo, and we had problems, we had a real difficult time getting any Alaskan buffalo, and they had to go, I don't know, Wyoming or somewhere else to import buffalo to start the herd there in Kodiak, and then you had all the buffalo that were causing all these problems up around Delta, and you couldn't get to them because the department wouldn't let you do that due to some technicality in the law. And it just didn't make any sense at all. I mean, here you are, you're running the risk of bringing animals in there that may have some diseases or whatnot, but that was fine, but you couldn't transport animals from within the state.
Are there further questions?